Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello and welcome to this podcast. In today's segment, we will be talking with Stephen Sobel, the chairman and CEO of Assured Enterprises. They're a very truly innovative cybersecurity firm known for its assessments, very proactive cybersecurity solutions, and an amazing tool called the Assured Scan DKV, which has the power to have prevented the Equifax attack if it were to be deployed. Assured is based in Northern Virginia near Washington, D.C. Steve, thanks for your time, and let's go and get started.
Thank you.
Yeah, we looked up your bio, and you have a very, very unique background in cybersecurity law and other things. Can you tell us some of the highlights of your career, and better yet, just tell us who you are?
Well, who am I? What people describe me as is a problem solver and someone who is focused on justly improving society. In law school, I was called Mr. Social Conscience in counterpoint to Mr. Capitalist in one of our classes. So we're here not to merely build a great company, but to help the world in its larger growth. My own personal background, I've had leadership positions in several high-tech companies, hardware, software, telecom, biometrics, fintech, and so on. Before that, I had a full career as an international commercial attorney. During that time, I represented typically two types of clients, Fortune 500 companies who were going overseas, and foreign governments and their dealings with the U.S. government. Before that, I had the first phase of my career. I was a professional student. I studied at Syracuse University and then went on to the London School of Economics, the School of Oriental and African Studies, the University of British Columbia, Stanford University, National Taiwan University, and then I went to law school. So from all of this, what I've learned is to think holistically, think in an interdisciplinary fashion, and to think before we act. How's that?
Sounds awesome, but how do you make the segue from law into cybersecurity? It seems such a quite a big jump.
Well, I was working on matters involving intelligence and national security. I represented a company that invented an encryption system and that was providing security for the U.S. Department of Defense. So it's not that big a leap when you take a look at the substance of what I was working on.
Okay. Excellent. Now, were you one of the founders of Assured Enterprises? Is there a formation story behind Assured? Tell us the company history. It'd be enlightening.
Yes, I was one of the founders. There was a handful of founders. And the way that Assured Enterprises was formed is that it really came out of about 10 years of informal discussions. Our chief technology officer was running a cybersecurity division at a Fortune 500 company, had worked in cybersecurity and secure communications at the Department of Defense and so on. And he had a different vision for where the world needed to go. And he was very analytic and studious. And so he came up after years of working at it on his own. He came up with a backbone of a system that would allow for proactive cybersecurity. Well, no one had ever heard about this. So back in 2012, he convened a group of about 10 experts from major U.S. companies, people who were the head of cybersecurity, chief scientist, that sort of thing, at Fortune 100 companies, And he brought in the past CIO at the Department of Army, someone handling cybersecurity at Missile Defense Agency, and so on. This group of about 10 people listened to a full-day presentation on how this could work. And this group basically told us that the need was there, that we were on the right path, and that we needed to get started. And so shortly thereafter, we formed the company.
It sounds excellent. Now, so tell us something about the markets you serve, you know, the U.S., foreign countries, sectors, and the like. And who is your typical target client? Is it the small to medium-sized business, the large company, like Fortune 500, or perhaps a combination of both of these?
Okay. So we do work in the U.S., of course, and in several foreign countries. We work in Canada. We've worked in the U.K. We have a presence that we're setting up in the Middle East and local partners. We've got colleagues in Latin America and Southeast Asia. So we're taking a very global view of all of this. We do work for the U.S. government, for commercial enterprises. We have worked for Fortune 100 companies quite successfully, as well as small and medium-sized businesses. The products that we have and the approaches that we have are tailored for everyone from the largest Fortune 500 companies down to smaller scale enterprises, including, in one case, we've done some work for sole practitioners in the legal community.
Okay. Now, let's get into your product and service line. And it looks like that you have quite an array of products and services ranging from, you know, cyber risk assessments, the triple helix product, the cyber score, risk management mitigation, comprehensive governance, regulatory compliance, deep software scanning through, I think, Assured Scan DKV. You've got proactive security, the IoT, which is a, you know, hot button topic these days. You have customized solutions as well as blockchain-based solutions. Now, your offerings seem very comprehensive, innovative, and, you know, yet more serious. How do your clients get started with you, and can you elaborate on these services and products in more detail, and why is it so important for your clients to engage you?
Thank you very much. You did capture a good range of the products and services that we offer. Our approach is to cybersecurity is holistic. This means that we've devised a system that enables us to functionally take a very detailed, fact-driven MRI, if you will, of your entire ecosystem. We're not just looking at your hardware or your software or your system architecture. We're looking at all of that. And we're looking at 20 other things: documentation, your internal operating procedures, what your budgets are, what the constraints are in your company for adoption of new ideas and new technologies. So we like to start out with our clients with a simple discussion. We like to talk about, what do you need? What are your problems? Where have you been? Where do you want to go? And then we can bring to bear some insight into what's possible. And then we can start the process of a comprehensive triple helix assessment if you're a large-scale company, or a different one of our assessment systems that's still built off of the same platform and part of the same family if you're a medium-sized company or a small company. Sometimes we'll talk to clients about services. If that's what they need, we have one client who came to us first wanting us to place an interim CISO inside their company. That's one of the services that we provide for clients. We also have virtual CISO services and so on. Sometimes we'll have a client who doesn't want an assessment. They've simply heard about AssuredScan DKV, and they want that system. And that's a system that we can install very quickly on a single desktop computer. And hopefully later I'll explain to you how that works so that you can see that it's a very powerful and cost-efficient tool.
Okay. Matt, please tell us more about the Triple Helix. How does this work for a small, medium-sized business company?
Okay, well, Triple Helix has been designed for large-scale companies. It is a comprehensive risk assessment, risk measurement, risk management, and risk mitigation system. So if you let me explain how this works for the large-scale companies, I'll then show you how we have tailored this for medium-sized companies and small companies. So the way this works is that we gather all of this information. And when we're talking about gathering information, we typically refer to this as data points. If you compare what the big four accounting firms are doing or some of the major management consulting firms when they provide their annual cyber risk assessments, we are gathering 6, 8, 10, 12 times the number of data points that they will ever collect. We're taking a very granular approach, and yet we have figured out how to do this with the same period of time of interaction with the client and without disrupting their business. So we've invented some tools that help us gather information. We look at things in advance. We talk to a fair number of people. Once we've gathered all of this information, then we're able to run it through our risk analytics system that we've built. And we have built from the ground up a comprehensive risk analytics system that meets or exceeds the highest standards set by the Society of Actuaries. There are a lot of people around today who would talk about scoring risk or coming up with some number. And we've taken a look at virtually all of these. And we are substantively different and qualitatively superior, we believe. And that is because we're gathering much more data. We're analyzing the data. We're not simply throwing an algorithm at you and saying, oh, based on what we can predict here and what we're looking at, this is what your score is. There's even one company we know of that will give you a score without even gathering any substantive information from you. We don't know how they do that. But when we built our risk analytics system, we built it so that we run an enormous number of Monte Carlo simulations. We built it using alternating modeling systems and on and on, all of the kinds of technological details that the Society of Actuaries, the geeks of the risk analytics world, know, love, and have called for. So once we run this data through the system, we are then ready to deliver three things to our clients. The first thing we deliver is a roadmap report. Now, if you've ever seen one of these annual cyber risk assessment reports from a major service provider, these are pretty standard, pretty boring, pretty dense. It's the kind of report where the customer simply ticks the box and says, oh yeah, we've got this. We can tell the board of directors we've got this. No one ever really reads it. No one ever really does anything with it very often. So we've designed a roadmap that is very different from all of this. Our roadmap has two parts. The first part, we tell the client what they're doing correctly. Most companies don't even realize what they're doing correctly and what's working for them and what is giving them security today. Because these are the things that if there's a budget reallocation, if there's some kind of restructuring that goes on in the company, you need to keep your eye on the ball and make sure you don't change these things. These are the things that you're doing right. The second part, for a Fortune 500 company, we will provide 20 to 30 recommendations. Now, our recommendations may address architecture, hardware, software issues, but they also address things like documentation and process, things like management interaction, things like the level of cybersecurity understanding at the board of directors level and the non-technical C-suite level. We're addressing things like training programs and hiring practices. Cybersecurity needs to be embedded into the thinking and operation of the company, and that's why we take such a holistic approach to this, because we can oftentimes see where a big problem is. So these recommendations that we give will talk about where improvements could be made. We will give some information about how much risk you're likely to reduce in your overall ecosystem by adopting one of these changes. We'll talk about the general costs associated with it, and we'll talk about the impact on the company's workflow, so that sometimes something that will give you a little bit of security will have a perfectly acceptable cost and easy to adopt for the workflow, and you might as well knock that off your list right away and go and implement that. Other times we'll find variations between the likelihood of risk reduction, the cost, and the impact, and now we can work with our client to establish the timetable, the roadmap going forward. That's the first deliverable. The second deliverable is the cyber score. So what we've done is, with all of this data coming through our system and our risk analytics tool, we've developed a way of grading the data, because if things in the real world work in operation with each other. So we've come up with 400 or so different correlations. And what we mean by a correlation is, if you have one company's next generation firewall and a different company's intrusion detection system, we know that those two systems don't work well together. We know that there's really only one very difficult, very complicated way of getting those systems to work securely with each other. And we know that if you go on Google, you might be able to find 8 or 10 different workarounds. So by gathering all of this data, when we get to the point of running a correlation, we already know exactly how these two devices have been hooked up to each other. And now we can see what risk has been created by that. Just because a workaround was done, does that mean that you need to go and correct that? Maybe, maybe not. It really depends on the level of risk that has been created. So this risk analytics tool allows us to issue a cyber score. Now, what we've done is we've calibrated our cyber score so that it is on the range of 300 to 850, just like a FICO score. That way, if a non-technical person, a member of the board of directors, hears that the cyber score, the cyber risk score in the company is 590, they know they've got a little bit of explaining to do and they've got a little bit of room to improve pretty quickly. On the other hand, if they hear that they're a 685, they might sit there and say, okay, well, that's pretty good. How do we get to a 700? How do we get to a 715? We want to be moving up. We want to demonstrate to the world that we are taking a serious, proactive approach to cybersecurity. And so we'll take a look at the cyber score, and in delivering the cyber score, we give a lot of detail. So we've taken this enormous body of data that we have, and we break it into three categories. First, we have cyber maturity, and this is the standard area that most of these cyber assessments look at: hardware, software, system architecture, and the like. But the second area we look at, and we do a deep focus on this, is on threats. Most organizations don't understand what the threat profile is of what they're facing in their company, in their industry. And the threats that someone has is truly a function of the data that they have in their ecosystem. If their data is rich enough to enable someone else to learn something they want to learn, odds are someone's going to come after you. So we spend some of our time talking with our clients about what they do, what's their data, who they serve, where they're going in their business. We talk to folks about whether they are planning any mergers or acquisitions, because these are things that affect the threat profile facing your company. Then the third area we look at is impact. When we look at impact, we mean what is the likelihood that you are going to be penetrated in the next 2 years, and what is the predictive amount of money that it's going to cost you to address a typical penetration that you're set up for. Because we have all of this data and this holistic, broad-based knowledge, we're able to answer that question with precision. So we give charts and graphs and all the detail to our clients on all of this, and we're prepared to come in and discuss it in detail with the client, as well as with their board or executive committees, audit committees, and the like, and we've done just that. So you can see that this is a very elaborate system, but I've only talked about two of the three deliverables so far, the roadmap and the cyber score. So the third deliverable is a regulatory compliance dossier. And what we do is, before signing a client up for a triple helix, we ask them, what are the regulatory compliance reports you have to file? And everyone has to do some of these. For many companies, it's the NIST framework or one of the specialized NIST requirements. If you're in critical infrastructure, which is one of the segments we go after, we have NERC-CIP, which is the cybersecurity protocols required for the electric power generation field. There are separate protocols required, of course, in banking and finance. In the U.S., FFIEC, for the major banks. If it's a major bank that is also publicly traded, they're likely SEC and GLBA requirements, and we can provide all of those. In total, what we've done is we've taken more than three dozen of all of these regulatory compliance systems, and we have built it into the analytics of Triple Helix so that a client simply tells us at the beginning of the relationship, I need an ISO 27001 report or a COBIT 5 report, or I need a GDPR report, or I need a New York State Department of Financial Services cybersecurity compliance report, or whatever. And we will automatically generate that report electronically for them at the same time that we deliver the roadmap and the cyber score. So our approach to Triple Helix is that it provides comprehensive, holistic, one-stop shopping for governance issues, for compliance issues, for figuring out where the world is going in analyzing your business. So you can see how complicated this sounds and how comprehensive this sounds. And you can also see that, this is a little bit of overkill if you're a medium-sized company or even a small company. If you're a small company, do you really want a couple of engineers coming in for a week to gather all of this data? And the answer is no, of course not. So what we've done is we have scaled down Triple Helix into several different tailored solutions for small, medium-sized companies. Let me tell you about a couple of these. So one is what we call Cyber Pro Maturity. And so what this is for a medium-sized company, this is a system that we deliver online to the client. And these are simply yes-no questions that the client can fill out. We have people who can talk to the client online to help them fill out the questions if they like. They might decide that there are two or three or four different people in their company who should answer different sections of the questions, and they can do that. They can have multiple people at multiple times look at this. Typically, clients will not fill out this questionnaire in one sitting. They'll start, they'll stop, they'll come back, they'll have someone else come in, and so on. And that way, this work fits into their work schedule. Once we get the data back, then we're able to generate a roadmap. And the only difference is that instead of providing 20 to 30 recommendations, we're typically providing 8 to 12 recommendations because smaller sized companies, medium sized companies, aren't going to have the bandwidth to even consider 25, 30 improvements for risk reduction. The second thing we deliver is the cyber score. And now, because we don't have all of the granularity and all of the data, rather than giving a single number, we're giving a range. And the range might be something like 625 to 630, in which case what we're saying to the client is that your baseline of what your lowest score is somewhere between 625 and 630. And so now you do know how much room you have to improve. And now you can see which of these recommendations are going to help reduce your risk. For these clients, we can either come in and manually do the regulatory compliance reports, or we actually have a number of these regulatory compliance reports that we have built in to an online system so that we can actually work with them to fill this out online so that we don't even send someone in order to address their compliance. So this is really a triple helix, but skinny down, taking less time, less information, more flexible, same kind of impact result. The third product in this family that I want to talk about, and we have many more, is Cyber Health Essentials. We've designed Cyber Health Essentials for small companies. And so we have really skinnied the questions down here so that a typical client should be able to answer all of our questions in about the length of this podcast. So it's not very disruptive for them. And again, they can start and stop, and they can have multiple people participate. When they have questions, they can call us, and we'll walk them through the questions and the answers that are appropriate for them to give based on the facts they're telling us. Once again, we'll give a baseline cyber score. We'll give the roadmap, telling them what they're doing correctly and where they might make improvements. For the small companies, we might only give two or three recommendations because it's a function of what the company tells us. Most small companies might not even have a full-time CISO person or even a full-time IT person on board. Giving them too many recommendations just doesn't make sense. So we can tailor this on a case-by-case basis for folks. And once again, we can deliver the regulatory compliance reporting that they need the same way as for CyberPro maturity. One of the things that is important about this whole assessment process is to stand back and not get caught up in all of this minutiae detail I've given you about how we go about it and what and all of these great deliverables we have and how powerful and unique our cyber score is. What we think is important is to be able to stand back and say, okay, how do we cost efficiently improve? And, gee, am I carrying more risk than I thought I was carrying? Maybe I need to talk to my insurance broker about this. Maybe we need an insurance policy. And these are things where we come in as well and can help our clients with, and we have. Once again, we take a very holistic approach. Now, I've probably given you more in detail. You probably feel as though you just opened up Pandora's box by asking me to tell you how Triple Helix and its progeny works. But that's a quick summary of a very comprehensive, holistic system that we have. How's that?
Well, no, it sounds excellent. I mean, in today's cybersecurity, threat landscape, you have to be as comprehensive as you can for the client. I mean, we, I believe they're both, legal and moral obligations after you engage as a customer to tell them what they're up against. So I think it's excellent. I think your product, honestly, I mean, I've interviewed probably 30, 40, cybersecurity startup companies. I've talked to their C-level execs. I've talked to their presidents, project managers. And this is probably one of the most comprehensive solutions out there. And, I think it's great that you're explaining all this to us because I think it's very important.
Thank you.
Can you tell us about your deep software scanning system, the Assured Scan DKV, And how is it different from the competition like Nessus, Rapid7, Qualys, you know, for example?
Sure. The starting point of understanding assured scan DKV is that some 80% of the successful cyber attacks arise from the exploitation of a known vulnerability in the software. Let me say this again. This is really powerful. About 80% of all of the hacks that we're looking at, that we hear about in the news, are fully preventable because the hackers are simply exploiting a known vulnerability in the software. So Assured Scan DKV, the letters DKV stand for Detect Known Vulnerabilities. Assured Scan DKV is a unique product on the market. It doesn't compete with any of those companies that you talked about. And I'll come back to how we interrelate with those other products in a second. But what I think it's important for you to understand is why are all of these vulnerabilities sitting in the software if they're there to be exploited? Does this mean that the people producing software produced software with holes in it? A vulnerability in this context is simply a hole that you can drive a truck through. So the answer is no. That's not typically what happens. We assume that most software developers are perfectly responsible. They use tools like Fortify or other good code practices scanners. I believe Qualys and Veracode have such scanners as well to help the coders figure out that they are delivering pristine, secure code at the time that the software leaves the shop. But here's the problem. The world is discovering, on average, 400 or 500 new detected known vulnerabilities every week. So that means that the week after the software has left the shop, there are new 400 or 500 vulnerabilities out there which may have cropped up in the software that left the shop. Now, there's a trick to the complexity of software development today that we need to be aware of. And that is that maybe as much as 85% of the software code, and these days software code might take up a million lines of coding, but some 85% of that is probably pre-existing libraries, DLLs, dynamically loaded libraries, and executables. And so this set of instructions is simply pulled down and fit into the code at the right place. Okay, let's not get too technical. What the heck does this mean? So what this means is if a coder is writing new software code and they want to put in a command to be able to print something, the print command and the interface with all of the printers is tried and true known technology, and you simply pull that down and pop that in. That's what some of these libraries, DLLs, and executables are. It might be something that speaks to an OCR reader. It might be something that speaks to some other external device that you're working with. And now the problem is that if you've got a million lines of code and you're going to run those electrons through the million lines of code. Unfortunately, you're creating a system of latency. Latency means the way you feel when you tell your computer to print something and nothing happens. And you're saying, well, what's going on? I just told it to print. Well, what's happening is it's running through the electrons are running through the instructions in the code. And so to avoid that problem, most software today is bundled. They take all of the known, fully operational, tried and true libraries, DLLs, and executables, and they bundle them together. Once they're bundled, all of these other scanners on the market skip over the bundles. What AssuredScan DKV has done, and what we have our patent pending on, is the ability to unpack, unbundle all of those libraries, DLLs, and simply look at the binaries, the zeros and ones, so that we can identify all of the known vulnerabilities. That's what this tool does on first blush. So, what does this mean for the real world, and why should anyone use this? Well, we've all heard about the WannaCry attack, Petya, not Petya, the attack against Equifax, Target, Home Depot, the ransomware attack against Atlanta, against Baltimore, that's ongoing right now. All of these attacks were successful because someone exploited a known vulnerability in the software in order to get into the ecosystem. And so now you're sitting there with lots of people saying, but this is inevitable. You're going to get hacked. There's nothing you can do but look up at the sky and hope that it doesn't rain and hope that you don't get attacked. Well, that's not our view. Our view is that we can identify all of these known vulnerabilities quickly, inexpensively, easily. And that's what AssuredScan DKV does. Not only do we identify all of the holes that are there, but we also pinpoint the location of each hole. And for every vulnerability we find, we provide detailed remediation instructions. This is how you go about fixing this hole. Our position is that if the client has a team that knows how to remediate, go ahead and do it. Just take the results of our report and proceed with remediation. We provide training. We provide service and support, project management, whatever the client needs. Or if you want us to send a team in and take care of it, we'll do that. So the approach that we take with AssuredScan DKV is one that now solves some pretty big problems. I wonder if I can divert for a second and tell you a little bit about what we did for the U.S. Department of Defense
great.
This tool. Okay. So one of our clients using AssuredScan DKV was the U.S. Department of Defense. And they had a system of producing in-house certain proprietary software, command and control instructions used in the battlefield. So obviously they're not going to someone outside and saying, you know, make some code for me and send it to me. They're doing it in-house. Because they're the Department of Defense, they had 9 different scanners available to them, including all of the ones that you listed when you asked your question a little while ago. And they took a look at the software packages that they wanted to scan using AssuredScan DKV. We recommended that they simply load these 25 software packages on a dumb desktop, meaning a desktop that was not connected to the network. Now, one of the things that makes our tool so powerful is that we don't need source code for any of the software that we scan. We also don't need to see any data that has been created by using the software for its intended purpose. So we're very secure. In fact, we our tool has a certification from the DoD that's referred to as DATM certification, but what it means is that we can run on a top secret, secure compartmentalized information network without any risk of intrusion into the DoD network system. We're perfectly safe for them. So this is a good housekeeping seal that's rather rare to obtain. In any event, we ran against the first package of software that they had. And let me give you some points of comparison. Some of these products that you identified that are, that do network scanning might take 2.5 weeks of training for the people involved at the DoD. Our training program was 3 hours. Some of these systems might take 2 to 3 weeks to install properly before you do the test run. Our installation time was literally less than 5 minutes. And so we were able to run our tool very quickly. And in the very first package that we ran against, we discovered scores of vulnerabilities. There were no false positives. These were all legitimate vulnerabilities. All of the detailed remediation instructions that we gave were available. The team of engineers we had trained, we simply exercised our the project management part of our contract and set them up to be able to remediate. And they were able to remediate all of the discovered vulnerabilities within 24 hours of discovery. We went on to the next package, and it was the same story. In every one of the packages we looked at, we found scores to thousands of vulnerabilities, and we were able to remediate 100% of them. There was only one in over several months of doing this. There was only one that took longer than 24 hours to repair, and that was because of the complexity of that particular library and its interaction with multiple networks and operating systems. So there's a real-world example of how this worked.
Sounds excellent. Now, what could he have done for major tech like that was experienced by Equifax? What steps could you have done to mitigate that this thing would have never have happened?
Right. Well, we've actually taken a pretty careful look at what happened in the case of Equifax. In the case of Equifax, there was a Big Four accounting firm that came in and did their standard annual cyber assessment early in 2017, the year of the attack. And their report indicated that there was some underperformance in the in-house vulnerability management team. So they said, maybe you want to do something about that. And of course, what they did was to recommend that they send in a team of people from the accounting firm to help improve performance at the vulnerability management level in Equifax. Well, by time that team arrived, the successful attack had already taken place, and they were penetrated. On the other hand, had Equifax simply had Assured Scan DKV installed, and by the way, we have an enterprise version we can put in the server room and push down to every node in a worldwide organization, or we can run this on a standalone desktop like we did for the Department of Defense. We can do it either way for clients. So if we were running this for Equifax, we know the Struts vulnerability that was exploited. We know how that exploit was injected. We also know, looking back at our own data, that because we have this enormous database of known vulnerabilities, and we are adding to it every day, we know that within 48 hours of this newly discovered vulnerability being reported, we had it loaded, including the remediation instructions, into Assured Scan DKV's database. So this meant that from the time the attack was known, it took several weeks before folks penetrated Equifax, they could have not only discovered it using Assured Scan DKV, but they could have remediated it. The attack would have never taken place. If the hole is closed, you can't get into the hole. One of the analogies that I use in describing software vulnerabilities, because not everyone can wrap their heads around what this means. In part, I believe, because the word vulnerability carries so many different meanings. Anyone who's raised teenagers knows that there are emotional vulnerabilities that your children experience from time to time. Well, that's not the kind of vulnerability that we're talking about. Sometimes you hear the term vulnerability to mean that there is an opportunity to create a problem in the future, and so on. What we mean is that there's a hole. It's that powerful, it's that direct. And if your ecosystem in your company is a boat, you've got a hole in the boat. And these holes individually might be very small. So you're taking on a little bit of water in the boat. And over time, you begin to build up the water, at which point the old school cybersecurity companies come in and say, we have a pump. Let's help you pump the water out of the boat. But we come along and say, why don't we pinpoint the location of each one of these holes and go plug it, remediate it, fix it, so that you're not taking on any more water? It's real simple. Why don't we do it? So that's how powerful Assured Scan DKV is. It could have, with close to certainty, prevented the entire Equifax attack, simply had Assured Scan DKV been run and acted on in real world time after it discovered the known vulnerability.
Sounds excellent. Now, when you talk to a CISO or CISO and other technical people, what reaction do you normally get? In what context do you get that response, I should say? It's kind of a broad question. So.
Yeah. So we typically get a not invented here syndrome type answer. This is awfully innovative, and we're not really up for innovation. In the last 6 months, one of the common questions that we've been asked, even by folks who have become clients, is, my gosh, if you can do all of this, why hasn't Cisco bought you yet? Well, we're not ready to be sold to Cisco yet. So, no, we're not doing that. Sometimes we run into simple inertia. Folks don't want to change their ways. And I can tell one story about this, and I actually have a couple more stories I'll tell you so that you get a flavor for how this works. But one software development company that is providing software to a major sector of the economy has about 30,000 software packages that have left their shop over the years. I'm sorry. They have over 30,000 customers, and it's 3,000 software packages or more that have left the shop over the years. So what we recommended was that we set up a program with them to run AssuredScan DKV against their software so they can remediate all of their software and send out the patches that they need to keep their software from harboring any known vulnerabilities. The person in charge said, I can see that your tool works. I can see that this is brilliant, but we're not buying this. And I said, okay, why? And the answer was, I'm retiring in 2 years. I have budgetary problems. I've spent a lot of time building a team of people that are loyal to me. I'm not disrupting either my workflow or my budget cycle, and I'm sure not disrupting my flight path to a successful retirement. I come in with your tool, and all of a sudden, someone is going to take a pot shot at me and say, my God, these guys just discovered 2,000 vulnerabilities in our software. Someone's going to say, I've been asleep at my job, when he hasn't. Until our tool came along, most companies had to do hunt and peck individual searches to try to find where these vulnerabilities are. So that's one thing that we've run into when we talk to CISOs and the like. So in essence, this is the last thing I wanted to say about that example. In essence, he's saying to us, he didn't like our products because we create for him a report of shame. We make him look bad in the eyes of his peers because he's been telling everyone he's on top of everything. Well, you can appear to be on top of everything until that Equifax-type exploit occurs, and then where are you? Well, that's what the risk is. That's what the thing is. And we don't see this as a report of shame. We see this as a report of improvement. And that's why if what we do is talk about risk, we're not talking about past performance. We're talking about what is the risk profile inherent in your company today that can be addressed. And how can we address it cost efficiently? How can we reduce your risk? How can we measure it? How can we document and demonstrate that you have engaged in commercially reasonable, proactive cybersecurity? Now, that's the legal standard of what boards of directors and C-suite executives are held to under the common law. So we can do that. We can provide all of that proof, all of that information. But if you don't mind, I wanted to go back and tell you one other story that just occurred to me that was not really a CISO. This was a CEO. And what happened here was that we were invited to do a triple helix type assessment at a small insurance company. The state insurance commissioner brought us in to do this because this particular insurance company was about to double its installed base of customers. And this insurance company specialized only in managing FSA and HSA accounts. And so our engineer goes out. We only sent one engineer for this size company. And our engineer went out, and fortunately we sent one of our senior engineers who had some serious U.S. government experience and understands how the world works. So our guy goes out and sits down with the CEO of this insurance company, who quickly says, "This is going to be the easiest assessment you've ever done. I know you're scheduled to be here for 2 full days, but if you like, you can just give us a good, clean bill of health in a couple of hours. I'll show you the server room, and you can enjoy your day in town tomorrow, no problem." And my guy looks at him and says, "So, how long has the penetration of your network been going on?" And the guy said, "There's no penetration of our network." The CEO said, "No one wants to break into our system. We only have that information. We don't have any access to money. We don't touch the money. All we do is we track for each insured how much money they have in their account. We don't control the account. The account's off at the insurance company that handles those payments. We don't do that. We tell them how much is in the account. We tell them how much they've drawn down each month. We see which are the eligible charges against the FSA and so on. And the only one I can imagine wanting to get into our system is one of our specialized competitors who would like to learn about the efficiencies of the techniques and the business process that we've set up to make this so attractive for our clients. And those are typically small companies, so they're not doing anything." My engineer looks at the guy and says, "So help me understand a couple of things. On my way to meet with you, I came straight from the airport. Did I go past a U.S. Air Force base?" And he said, "Yeah." And he said, "By any chance, are any of your clients today working at that Air Force base?" And he said, "Yeah, about 45% of all of our insureds are working on the Air Force base." And the reason that the commissioner of insurance asked us to come in is because you're doubling the number of people you're going to handle. And that's based on your signing a deal with two companies to handle all of their employees. And he said, "Yeah, that's right." And those two companies are Lockheed Martin and Northrop? "Yeah." My guy said, "So, again, how long has the Chinese government been in your network?" Guy said, "Chinese don't want to know anything about what we have. Are you crazy?" And my guy said, "I'm sorry, but I'm not crazy. If you think about it, the Chinese know that people working on that Air Force base, some of them are going to be working at Skunk Works, the secure facilities on the base. If they can come into your data and run those names of those people so they can see who has spent their entire annual FSA allotment in, say, the first 2 months of the year, they now know that that's a family that has a medical emergency, or a chronic medical problem, that's a family that is under some financial stress. You've just helped create a recruiting list for one of our adversaries. The CEO turned white as a sheet. And the end of the story is that eventually our engineer did go into the server room, and it actually took him less than 3 hours to discover the penetration, and it had all the signature details of exactly what he thought was going on. And so we shut that down.
Oh, wow.
So that's one of the stories here as well. And once again, had we installed a SHRTScan DKV, we would be monitoring all the time what newly discovered holes are showing up in the software that you have. A couple of other features about SHRTScan DKV: it works against proprietary software of the kind that the Defense Department was using. It also works against third-party software, whether it's from Microsoft, Oracle, CA, anyone else who's selling you software. It has the same results, and we have programs in place so that we can work with the major software developers who are out there and make sure that they're sending along the patches that are needed as a result of what SHRTScan DKV discovers. How's that?
Okay, cool. So, sounds awesome. Now, what if cybersecurity insurance, that's a big thing now coming about this year. In fact, I've interviewed one podcast, I guess, guest a few months ago where they do some cybersecurity insurance. It's still kind of a murky area. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, we've actually developed a whole platform for cyber risk insurance. And we are right now in the discussion phase of working things out so that hopefully in just a few months' time, I'll be able to come back and explain to you precisely what we're doing. But the whole idea here is to take the risk analytics that we have from our Triple Helix and CyberScore system and be able to turn that into actionable service-related information for an insured. And so as I talked about with the family of Triple Helix products, small companies have different needs than large companies and everyone in between. And so tweaking and tailoring this to get it just right is sort of what we're doing right now. Hopefully we'll have something to talk about in a few months.
Okay. Now, do you provide other services, products, or maybe a combination of both?
Yes. We have a full array of services. One of the most popular services that we have is a training program that is geared for boards of directors and non-technical C-suite executives, the CFO, the head of HR, that sort of thing. Because companies, as I said before, are all faced with this legal challenge of how do we demonstrate, how do we prove, if we ever have to, that we have been engaged in commercially reasonable, proactive cybersecurity, and therefore our insurance policy should hold tight, therefore our claims against us by shareholder derivative suits or third parties or regulators are not going to win because we met that standard of performance. So we've designed a seminar series that we call Cybersecurity and the Law. And so once again, you can see my own background bleeding into some of this holistic approach that we take. And so we're telling, we're there to be able to work with the board of directors or the audit committee or C-suite executives about what their exposure is. What do they need to know about all the cybersecurity stuff? How do you know enough, and how do you know that you've taken the right steps so that you can sleep at night? Because right now, most executives are sitting there saying one of their number one worries in the world is cybersecurity, because it's an unknown to them. In fact, within the last week or so, the CEO of Delta Airlines came out and said that his number one fear has nothing to do with the safety of the aircraft. It has to do with cybersecurity. Cybersecurity is his number one concern, and he's right. It should be. And it should be because there are so many known vulnerabilities buried in the software that are all over the ecosystem. It's because no one has figured out how to genuinely wrap their hands around sufficient detail so that we can figure out risk. And that's what we do. We do those two things. Now, we're not a big four accounting firm or a big, well-known management consulting firm today. And so, you know, Delta Airlines might sit there and say, well, gee, why should we listen to you? And well, the answer is because we've done this for Fortune 500 companies, DOD, other major companies, and look at the results that we get. You know, it's extraordinary.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Now, can you tell me a little bit about blockchain? I've written a couple of articles on that for some clients in the past, and blockchain is a very unique concept, and especially as it comes down to cryptojacking. Tell me a little bit about your experience, your approach to that.
Okay, so a little bit about our experience. We've developed a blockchain security product already, and this product enables us to manage the encryption keys on any encryption system used in the world today. We have used the blockchain so that very quickly, very efficiently, we can manage either the public key or the private key's absence in being able to open up a particular device. So let me give you a couple of examples about what we address here. You may recall that a few years ago, there was a dispute between the FBI and Apple Computer. The FBI wanted to break the encryption on an iPhone that belonged to the San Bernardino bomber. Apple Computer said, if we break the encryption for you, we break it for everyone, and no, we're not going to do that. And so there was an impasse. Well, the product that we've invented solves this problem, because from the beginning, had we installed the key management system that we've devised, the FBI would be able to get into the San Bernardino bomber's phone, and only that phone, very simply, doing exactly what they know how to do, what they're supposed to do. Go get a court order. Court order says you get into the San Bernardino bomber's phone. We use our escrowed encryption key to be able to provide access to that unique phone. So people ask, well, if you're going to do this uniquely down at the individual device level, how many different codes can you have? So, well, we've geared the system so that we're talking about billions. I mean, if the world needs 30 billion of these devices protected this way, we can do that. And because it's blockchain, every individual escrow key is broken into the blockchain. It's gone from existence, reassembled on demand, and the like. And so this is a system that uses blockchain to provide security. But to go back to your larger question, I think, you were asking about our company's approach to blockchain. And what I think all of our listeners need to understand is that blockchain does not mean security. Blockchain does not mean security. And this is a major confusion in the world. Let me explain. If you're taking a look at what is in the blockchain, the answer to that question is that there are hash codes. And the hash codes are used as the identifiers pointing to volumes of data somewhere else. The somewhere else is a database. Where's the database? It's not stored in the blockchain. It's stored in the wild. It's stored in the cloud. It's stored on a server. It's stored somewhere, but not in the blockchain. The only thing that's in the blockchain are the hash codes that will point to the data. So we've learned, because we've worked with some cryptocurrency exchanges and other financial exchanges that rely on digital transactions, we know that unless you take an entire ecosystem approach like we take, you can't figure out what the security is on the cloud system you're using, on the database that you've got, and the like. You've got to make sure that the encryption system is up to the task, and it's got to be up to the task of handling both encryption at rest and encryption in transit. And some people say there's a trade-off you have to make cost efficiently between the two. We don't believe it. And in fact, with the backbone that we've created that I talked about that helped us launch the company, it's a product line that we call Assured 7 Plus. One of those layers is our own proprietary encryption system. So yes, our blockchain security will work with our encryption system, but it'll work with anyone else's as well. We don't need to do that in order to, we don't need to deploy our encryption system in order to improve the risk posture of a client. Maybe just the key management system is what they need. There's a second example that's more real, I think, about all of this. And that is, take a look at what's happened to Atlanta and Baltimore and some of these very large ransomware attacks. Let's assume that you've got a proprietary ecosystem. So you're a government agency, you're a city government, you're a company that has its own databases, its own multiple operating systems and networks. You've got a combination of VoIP and secure Wi-Fi or unsecure Wi-Fi in your ecosystem. But you've got a relatively complex ecosystem. Now, the thing about this ecosystem is that when we take a look at it from a blockchain perspective, what we're trying to do is to figure out where the blockchain interfaces have occurred. And we do that. So it may be the case that you're maintaining a little bit of data that is protected through a blockchain. but it points to a much larger database. We can come in and resolve that. We can come in and protect that. What does ransomware do? Ransomware comes in and typically exploits a known vulnerability in the software sitting on that system. And why are they going after city governments? Because city governments are notorious for not upgrading their software. They can't afford to do it every year or 18 months. And so they have old software. And if you're adding 400 or 500 vulnerabilities a week to the entire universe of known vulnerabilities, over time, it's that old software that's going to be easy to penetrate. So all we're doing is making life easy for the hackers by not running AssuredScan DKV and remediating all of that old software. And at some point, we can even show you that the cost efficiency might be upgrade your software, change the software. Maybe that's what you should be doing if it's going to cost too much to remediate all of the holes. But at least people are working on a factual basis. So what's this got to do with blockchain? Well, when the ransomware guys come in, they will corrupt and disable your own encryption system. And now you can't get into your own data because all of your authorities, all of your management rights have been disrupted. And even if you have your own encryption system for your own ecosystem, they get into the software, they can come in and disrupt. Well, if we've already installed our blockchain security system on that ecosystem, we can use our escrow key to reestablish your connectivity so that you can get the data out without having to go and deal with the ransomware guys. Now, the problem is, of course, that you've got to do this in such a way that the bad guys don't continuously come back in. We've got to double check to make sure they haven't left something behind, a new Trojan horse that'll go off, lots of details. But that's what our forensics team and the like can do. And so when you're asking me about services, we do have folks who can respond to incidents and do forensics. We do have virtual CISO services and interim CISO services. We do have teams that will provide the remediation for a network, a software system. We do have people who specialize in documentation. Simple things like CoopDR, continuity of operations and disaster recovery documentation. We've got a group that specializes in that to make sure that you're set up. We've got a group that interfaces with your outside lawyers or insurance company, if that's what you need, and so on. We have, as I said, quite an umbrella of services. But our whole approach with our clients is not to sell them on what we have. Our whole approach is to give the client the visibility into what their risks are. Give the client the information into what it's going to cost to mitigate those risks. Give the client the opportunity to see what's possible and let the client decide what's best for them in terms of budget, program, style, products that they take on, and the like. So is that helpful?
Yes, that's very helpful. And we are coming just down to the last few minutes of our show here. So I just want to ask one last question here, if you can just maybe wrap this up like in 2 minutes or so. One thing
yes.
I get asked all the time, and I ask all my guests, what do you recommend to clients to do to protect themselves from a cyber attack or cyber threat? If you can just give me an answer like in the 2 or 3 minutes, because we only have like maybe I think 5 minutes left in the show, that'd be great.
Well, we think the two most cost-efficient things people can do is to get a detailed cyber risk assessment that shows them what they need to do, and they should get one that's tailored for the size company and the industry that they're in. And the second thing we think is that you should at least have a preliminary run of Assured Scan DKV so that we'll tell you in the 55 software packages running in your ecosystem, you have 1,342 vulnerabilities. And those kinds of numbers are not unusual. And then we can tell you, you know, what you might want to do about it. And at that point, you can figure out that, yes, this works for me, and I want to go solve this problem.
Okay. Steve, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. I mean, we really appreciate it. And we hope we'll read some future podcasts down the road here. I'd like to talk to you more about the cybersecurity and blockchain. That's another topic of passion mine, and especially the Internet of Things. I mean, that's such a gargantuan, nebulous topic. I think we had a great conversation on that. Cybersecurity insurance and, you know, the role of the government when it comes to contractors and policy issues. I think we can have some more, you know, more topics down the road here. So thank you for your time on this Memorial Day weekend, and we look forward to talking to you here in the near future. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and I'd love to address each of those issues that you just identified at the end here. And there is much more to talk about on blockchain, on insurance. Let me just mention that we're taking a look at releasing an IIoT security product later this year. So that's coming, and we also, of course, have some serious creative ideas for defense contractors and for the U.S. government to consider when anyone's interested in hearing. So thank you. Picked some very good topics for us for the future.
We'll be done here for the summer for some more exciting podcasts. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.